Welcome to the Back in Time podcast with Kyle and JD, where every week we jump into our DeLorean, cruise to 88 miles per hour, and travel back in time to review our favorite films from all genres and bring you celebrity interviews every single week.
Very good, Lewis. Short but pointless.
Pizza Dude's got 30 seconds.
You want me to yank you out of that seat and shake it out of you?
I don't have it. Screws fall out all the time. The world's an imperfect place.
And now, here is your host, Kyle Autry, and his co-host, JD. Welcome back to the Back in Time podcast.
Welcome back to the Back in Time podcast. I'm sorry.
What are you doing?
I'm sorry. I thought for maybe once in the sake of humanity that I would get to do the introduction, but no, go ahead, Kyle. Keep cornering the introduction.
Now I forgot my line, director. Hey, by the way, we're having a director on the show today. He'd be perfect to give me my line since I've now forgotten it. We're going to be diving into that in a second, but JD, since you already interrupted me, I'm not going to ask how you're doing. I don't care. But how are you feeling emotionally?
Emotionally? Like on a scale of 1 to 10 or like on a scale of like fish to Swedish fish?
Yeah, on a scale like 1 to Titanic. How are you feeling emotionally?
Definitely unicorn.
Okay. I like where your head's at. In your spirit. I like it all. Now, guys, we're going to bring in a director here in a minute for a really fun movie that is coming out in January and then on February everywhere, which we will get into in the episode. But we're going to have Michael Thomas Daniel, who is a writer, director, producer on the show. As always, we want to thank you for just hitting the download button and subscribing to the show. You can subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, a couple other places as well. Just find it, subscribe. It's totally free. And then support us by following us on social media at Back in Time Pod, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. JD, anything you want to say before we get into the interview?
Well, first of all, I'm very disappointed with you, and I sure think you are a miserable wretch. But no, this is a rare treat for you audience. We try to bring on as many exciting guests as we possibly can, and to be able to have Michael here as he's launching his feature film debut with an amazing cast that we'll get into. It's a great episode, and he's a great guest. So, I mean, if you guys and gals are looking for a new horror movie to sink your teeth into, listen to this episode, then get ready to watch the full thing.
Let's go ahead and let's get to the interview. Let's bring in Michael Thomas Daniel.
Hello, everyone. This is Chris Clues, author of the book series What 80s Pop Culture Teaches Us About Today's Workplace. I wanted to let you know that my second book in the series is now available with 10 more iconic movies from the 80s and even more totally awesome business lessons we can learn from them for today's workplace. Yes, believe it or not, characters like Jessica Coley and movies like Coming to America, Weird Science, and Caddyshack can teach us some super valuable lessons for our business, career, workplace, and lives. So throw on some parachute pants, take out that members-only jacket. Honestly, if you still have both of those in your closet, we're going to need some proof. And kick back with What 80s Pop Culture Teaches Us About Today's Workplace, book number one and book number two. You can find them both in paperback and Kindle on Amazon.com today. Have a totally radical day and a totally awesome holiday season.
All right, welcome back to the Back in Time podcast. I'm your host, as always, Kyle Autry, with my co-host, JD. JD, how are you tonight?
I'm doing fantastic. I'm super excited about tonight's special episode. We've got a great guest, and we've got a great topic ahead of us.
Yeah, as we talked a little bit about on the intro, we have a special guest on the line, so let's not waste any more time. With us tonight, we have writer, director, producer Michael Thomas Daniel. He is the genius behind the new horror thriller, Get Gone, which we are going to talk about here today. But Michael, welcome to the show, man.
Hey, thanks, man. I appreciate the genius comment. That's a good way to start things.
There we go. Yeah, a little brownie point for me, but I'll take what I can get these days, man. But yeah, we both had a chance to watch the movie today. Yeah, well done all around, you know, by everybody involved. And yeah, we're excited to get into it. But yeah, I mean, tell our audience a little bit about yourself. Obviously, we know you're a filmmaker. You're out in the Oregon area. But yeah, give us a little insight into you.
Okay. Well, obviously, my name is Michael Thomas Daniel. I'm a writer, first and foremost. I've written 16 feature screenplays. I've done work for hires, like on some scripts. I've done shorts. I've produced or made my own, a couple of little shorts. Done 3 documentaries. I did one on I hiked the Appalachian Trail and filmed that. I hiked the Pacific Crest Trail, filmed that whole thing. And then I walked across America and filmed that and did just documentaries because I was trying to start off doing whatever kind of film I could with what I had. And I bought a Canon GL2 and I had a little bit of money, and I had my buddy Dave Burles get behind me, and we just said, well let's do this. And so, you know, we started off that way. And then it rolled into me doing more writing gigs, and just, you know, it turned into, I've always loved writing, and I just got firmly into it a little bit later, and, you know, just been busting my ass since, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. That's cool. I mean, the fact that you hiked the Appalachian Trail, I mean, I would have died during that hike myself. And then you made a film out of it. It's pretty incredible too.
Yes, sir. So, Walking with Freedom. I filmed it in 2003.
That's cool. Is that available for people to find?
It was for, I stopped making them. Actually, it was Cammore's number one selling DVD for like 7 years.
Okay.
And Cammore's like this big outdoor store. It sold tons of copies. It played at outdoor events. And, you know, I went to different outdoor places and did screenings and talks about the outdoors and hiking and all this. Went to schools and did it. But it sold probably 25, 30,000 copies over about 10 years.
Jeez.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, it was awesome.
You know, it's just sitting on their shelf, or what? Where's that? Is that owned by Cammore then?
No, it's owned by me. It's just I stopped making them there. You can find it on my YouTube page. It's actually broken up into like 3 parts now. It's just for free. It's on there now.
Well, there we go. Yeah, so if anybody wants to check out that, find his YouTube page. Is it just your name?
Yeah. If you search Lion King Hike and Walking with Freedom, it'll come up.
Okay.
I probably got 150 video clips of trails all over America on that site, along with the behind the scenes stuff for Get Gone and other film work.
Oh, neat.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely check that out. Very nice. Yeah, so we're primarily Midwest guys. So I grew up in Indiana. Justin's from Illinois. Have you ever been this way? Doing any hiking?
American Discovery Trail, I walked right through them. You know, Peru, where the circus Hall of Fame is.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
I actually interviewed the 2 ladies that run the school because they have a little program for kids there, like summer camp, and it's Join the Circus. Okay. So I walked right through. I walked through Illinois. I got robbed in East St. Louis, right outside of Jolie, the Ebbs Bridge, because it crosses right there.
Right there.
That totally adds up.
The canal walk. I got robbed at night at Spoon Point.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, that definitely sounds right.
Yes, sir. Good times.
Yeah. Only in the Midwest will you get robbed with a spork.
Yep. But you know what? Other than that, everybody in Indiana and Illinois are awesome human beings.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're all right until you see us at nighttime. Yeah.
As long as you avoid Joliet, Kankakee, and Gary, you're fine.
Yeah, I walk by there during the day.
Yeah, don't go see Michael Jackson's family home at nighttime. That's a horrible idea.
No.
Or during the day either, for that matter.
It's that's true.
No better.
Well, let's get a little bit into the film. So obviously you started with the documentaries, you had good success with that. How did you get into feature films?
Well, I've been a movie lover my entire life. I've probably seen more movies than anyone you can name, and probably watched most of them twice. I'm the kind of weirdo that can, you know, everyone else is talking about the movie, I can tell you who directed it, when it came out, who's in it, what are the movies those people are in. You know, what TV shows, it's just like weird, you know, like some people retain knowledge. Mine's movie stuff. So that's kind of how it started for me. I've always loved movies, always loved writing, always loved creating. And I just, you know, I let normal life got in the way, and I just kind of believed the wrong things for a long time. And I just had a kind of a traumatic incident happen in my life. And I was like, you know what, the hell with all this? I'm going to do what I love from this point forward. Live or die, sink or swim, starve, die in the woods, whatever it takes. I'm not going to do anything other than what I love, because I can be completely 100% miserable doing what I love, or I could be 100% miserable doing something I hate. I mean, you know, or you can be super happy doing what you love, even in the bad times. And that's what I decided is far more important. I've been a far happier person. I've had more success too. and acknowledging yourself. If you're a writer and a filmmaker, it's super important. When people say, hey, what do you do? Don't say, well, I work down at Kinko's, but I write sometimes. Say, I'm a screenwriter. I say, I'm a filmmaker. Acknowledge it, because it ain't going to manifest if you don't actually acknowledge who you are and what you are. You can't make yourself be that, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Robert Rodriguez says the same thing in all of his filmmaking classes, too. You're not aspiring. If you're doing it, you're doing it.
Dead on. Exactly.
That's awesome. That's great advice. I love it. Now, were you – so you're a huge movie buff. Now, were you involved in casting of this movie?
I cast the whole thing.
Okay, because I immediately thought, well, you must be the one that casted this, because you have some really, like, veteran actors on this cast.
Yeah.
Lin Shaye and, yeah, take over.
Yeah, I was, yeah, well, a couple of the guys, like Rico Anderson and Adam Bitterman, those, you know, the outdoor guy, Craig and Rico, those two guys I actually met in a fitness class in L.A. like 4 or 5 years ago. So we've been friends, and I actually wrote both of those characters, the outdoor guide and the ranger, for those two guys, because they're friends of mine, and I've known them. I know they're both professional actors, and I was like, well, you know what? These roles are perfect for these two guys. And Lin Shaye and Robert Miano, I got contact through my DP. He had worked with Lin before, and he said, hey, you know, maybe she'll take a look or take a listen. And so he gave me her information. I wrote her a nice letter. She responded. We talked a couple of times. She read the script. She enjoyed it. And we went from there, and she agreed to be in the movie. And I was blown away. I was like in shock for like a week. But I was like, man, I was so proud and happy to have Lynn involved, because she is a trooper, man. She is so and she's an amazing person, too. She's tough as nails, man. I like, you know, I was trying to explain this. I was like, we had a stunt woman for, like, I'm not going to do a spoiler, but one of the scenes in the movie towards the end when there's a lot of drama going on. And I think you know what I'm saying, for interaction with her and Rico. We had a stunt person that was going to do the specific thing that she did. And she was like, no, I'm going to do it. And she took that scene, you know, basically. So, you know, just that's the kind of person she is. She steps right in, man, you know, and she's been very supportive of the film. She's been very supportive of all the actors in here. And that's really important to me, man. It shows that people care about the product that they're a part of, you know, and this is a collaborative environment. And we all have to put stuff in. We all have to bleed. We all have to, you know, give a little bit to make something awesome happen, you know, and yeah. We all want the rewards. We've got to be in it together, you know?
Yeah. How much, you know, I mean, between her and Robert Miano, I mean, they're close to 500 credits. Like, how much do you lean on them being a first-time feature filmmaker during the process? Or did you just kind of just go with it and you didn't have to ask for help too often?
No, what I did was I talked to both of them. Hang on 1 second. My dog's squishing her toy. Stop, baby.
Oh, no, we've had that before on here.
Yeah. My dog is a regular guest on the show. Yeah.
So, no, what I did was I talked to Lynn and Robert, and we just, you know, communicated back and forth about the characters and what they were and who they were, et cetera. And everybody, even to the bit players on the set, I knew the people knew their jobs, you know. And what I did, I would break down what was going on, what we needed, and sit back and let them do their job. If there was something that needed to be corrected, I'd say, hey, can we try it this way? A lot of times I just let Lynn do her lines and then let her run, you know, and that's the best thing with a professional actor who knows how to riff or who knows how to take your lines and run with them and take the character you created. It's magic, man. I mean, she made me laugh. She almost brought a tear to my eye in one of the scenes that she was doing it. It was amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. That's incredible. Well, I mean, and it's, you have a couple actors on board as well that people will recognize the name, but they may be seeing these guys for the first time. You've got Weston Cage Coppola, who is Nicolas Cage's son, and then you have his nephew here, who is I'm drawing a blank on his name, sorry.
Bailey
Coppola as well. I mean, both of them, like, the minute that Weston talks, you know he's Nicolas Cage's son. The minute you see Bailey, you know that he's related because he looks exactly like Nicolas Cage did in the 80s and 90s with, like, Con Air.
There you go.
That's a great one.
Hi, McDonough. H.I.
So tell us a little bit about those guys and working with them and what it was like.
Well, I had worked with Bailey's father, Christopher Coppola, on numerous projects, a Ducati motorcycle commercial. Mm-hmm. I did two or three different script projects for him. I've done editing stuff. I've known Bailey since he was a young kid, like since he was probably 14, 15, and been to their home, all this, you know, and so I knew the family. So I basically, when I was writing the character, I knew he acted, and I kind of reached out to CRC and said, hey, man, you know, do you think Bailey would be interested in this project? And he said, well, send the script. I did. And then Weston, who I hadn't met before, he took a look, and then they both liked it. They read through it with some friends and said, yeah, man, we're game, you know, and they came on board too. So, you know, it was amazing. I was lucky to have all the people I had, to be quite honest.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Do you get any sense working with them? Like they feel like the shadow of dad, and, you know, obviously Bailey's dad's very successful as well with what he does. Do you get any sense of that with them?
Nah, I think everybody's pretty much their own individual. I think what happens is, though, they have to face what you just said from other people. Like,
yep.
When the first thing people say when they see him, oh, wait, so you're Nick's son. You know, it's like even mm-hmm. for Christopher, it's like, oh, you're Nick's brother or you're Nick's. You know, it's like it's always that instead of, oh, you're Wes, you're an actor, you know. And that's, I think, to both of those guys, their individuality is probably incredibly important, you know, especially coming from such a talented family of so many people that so many people recognize and know, you know. I think they're all striving for their own, you know, their own spot. You know, that's why he was going first. It was Wes Cage Coppola. I think, you know, he was trying to, you know, he was doing his own, you know, finding his own spot, you know. Mm-hmm. He's doing a great job. I think he's doing a really good job of what he's doing.
Yeah, yeah. He's got a great look to him.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah, he can alter how he looks, you know, bad guy, good guy, you know.
Yeah, that's so cool, and that's so incredibly useful in a movie like you've created with Get Gone, for sure. So yeah. Circling back to a little bit about the film, what were some – obviously, I'm assuming you took some inspiration from some of your documentary work into this feature project, but what were some of your inspirations – that you took, or films that you took a shining to, if you will, that were just sort of like your inspirations?
What I wanted to do with this film, because, you know, I knew what the budget was when I wrote it, I knew what we had to work with. So I wanted to take a horror film. I wanted to take elements of classics. I wanted to present them in a way that was relatable, that you've seen in some way before, but in a new way, without stupid jump scares, which I hate jump scares so much. It's not scary, with less mm-hmm. gore, because, I mean, some gore done correctly in the right kind of film is awesome, but blood and guts just for the sake of blood and guts is worthless. It's nothing. It's not scary. It's just like, ugh, that's gross, you know? It's like, to me, the scarier thing is knowing that guy who's going to rip your guts out is right outside the door, and you don't know if you can get away, you know, and there he is, he's in the room with you now, and it's dark and you're hiding in the corner. Those kind of things are far more frightening than just seeing somebody's guts blow apart, you know?
100% agree.
So yeah, that's kind of what I was going for with it. And if you look at the film, you will see, actually, there's nods to Halloween, to Friday the 13th, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, Psycho, and a couple more films. There's actually literally, there's a shot, like one shot for those movies that's almost from the movie. It's like, it's just first second, but it's a nod to those films, and there it's in the film. Like, you could, if you watch it through with that in mind, you could probably say, oh, okay, that, okay. You know,
yo, that's fantastic. So
if you know those classic horror films,
I was going to say, so from being a film buff, are those like your bread and butter? Are those your favorite horror movies?
I love Halloween, because that is more suspenseful. Same with Texas Chainsaw. It's actually more suspenseful. It's not near as gory as people think, too. You know, none of those classics really, or even Friday the 13th has got, you know, the axe hit, but it's not that gory. It's more the tension and the fear. It turned into gore after the fact. After, oh, kill movies are great. Then it turned into just bloodfest. But all those classic horror films from the 60s, 70s, 80s, all of them deal far more with the suspense and far more with the disturbing nature of, like, human nature, which is, to me, far more interesting, because the normal person that's your next door neighbor that you know better than anybody, he might have a body in his basement that he eats once a week. You don't know, you know, that kind of stuff, far more frightening, you know?
Yeah, that's for sure.
Yeah, it takes an element of this could really happen. this exactly. guy could be my neighbor. It's just or the guy that lives in town.
That's it. So. World building, making it as real as possible for your viewer. And that's what I was really hoping I could do that and tried really hard to do that. And shooting in Oregon, it's such a big, beautiful spot. Yet what I wanted, and I hope you caught this, was it starts big, and then it gets more and more claustrophobic as it goes along. It's okay. Like it goes from – I don't even show the tops of trees if you notice that in a lot of the shots in the woods. I keep it like tight so it feels like you're stuck in the woods. And then it goes into the I can't say too much, but but then it goes into other places where it gets smaller and smaller and smaller, right. And to the end where you're still – I got to watch out. I almost said something. It's too easy to blow out spoilers.
Yes. We don't want to give away any spoilers.
Explain something, but I can't do it.
Talk without getting into the spoilers. Just talk about the location a little bit. So Cascade Locks, Oregon. I mean, beautiful location. We actually texted back and forth about this. We're like, hey, man, remember that script we wrote? Does this not feel like the perfect location for this? Like exactly what we had in mind. And he was I tell
you why Cascade Locks worked out for a shooting location. Originally I was going to shoot it in Southern California. But my buddy, my friend, Joseph Shelley, who was also the main investor in the project and the executive producer, he lives there in Cascade Locks, and he has a set that's in the film, the Hobbit House, the love tunnel, the love dungeon thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually in his backyard. That's actually – he built that. It looks more like a Hobbit house when you see it when it's not made up to look like what it looks like in the movie.
Wow.
He actually built that in the side of the hill at his house. It's awesome. So we put that in the film. But what I did is I moved to that town 6 months prior to us filming. Got to know the community. Got to know all the people. Told them what I was doing. Through that, I got almost every single location for free. I had locals wanting to help out. I got a permit to shoot in this giant, massive city park where all the camping sequences take place for $250 for a week. We got that whole entire island.
Wow.
Dude, I'm telling you. And so that I highly recommend if you're making a film in a location and you're the producer, director, move to that area a month or so in advance. Yeah, it'll make a huge difference. And I think without the local people in Cascade Locks, thank you, Cascade Locks locals, Julie, Shelley, love you guys. Without those people, this film might not have ever happened, and it's important that all of us filmmakers, we acknowledge the people in these little towns that, are part of what we do, because without them, without their support or even permission, we wouldn't be doing this.
Yeah. I noticed doing a little bit of research. They've had a couple, they had a drama film a couple of years ago that was filmed there.
Oh, wow.
And then one of our favorite 80s movies. Short Circuit has scenes from Cascade. That's really cool. Do you know where those locations are?
I do. Actually, in the first one we're talking about is the one with Reese Witherspoon. It's called Wild. It's actually about Cheryl Strayed hiking the Pacific Crest Trail and her drug addiction and whatever. We actually filmed the one sequence they filmed in Cascade Locks is where we filmed all the camping sequences. It's the same spot.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, same exact area.
Very nice. So there you go. All of our 80s, our 80s movie fans, and this is primarily an 80s, 90s podcast, will love that little tidbit. And Short Circuit's going to be a movie we talk about at some point, because we typically will take a movie and just dissect it scene by scene.
And that's when Fisher Stevens played an Indian guy.
Yes, he did.
He sure did.
See, I know all the movies are crazy.
And he nailed it too. But yeah.
He did.
Interesting. Now, I want to talk a little bit about just the where people can actually watch the movie. So I know it's not released yet. I believe I've got it as February 11th is the release date on Amazon.
Yeah, we have January 24th. We have actually a theatrical release in New York, Hollywood, Columbus, and I think they said a couple other cities. I'm not sure yet. I just found all this out. So that's really awesome. Then January 28th, it is on VOD. I know I think it's Amazon Prime, iTunes. Yep. It's all over the place. That's January 24th. And then it comes out on DVD February 11th.
Perfect. Yeah. So if you want to check that out, we'll definitely plug that at the end.
Awesome.
Now, we want to talk a little bit about some of your favorite movies. So, I know you said you're a big movie buff. What do you have a favorite genre?
No, I mean, I love everything, and I write everything, too. And a lot of people say you can't write in every genre, but I do. My favorite filmmakers are probably let's start in some kind of weird order. I say Joe Dante, John Landis, Steven Spielberg, the Coen brothers. Roger Deakins is the cinematographer, but I love him more than anything. Those, you know, that's my Scorsese, you know, I mean, just you, obviously you're classic directors, you know, who do amazing work. But I mean, the Coens are a huge inspiration in everything I do. Just because I love their humor and I love their stuff is dark, but it's always funny. And I think I hope you guys laughed at some of the stuff in my movie because I included a lot of humor intentionally, you know, to release those moments. So, So yeah, we have, those are my favorites, I guess, right now. And if, as far as films go, it might surprise you. The Color Purple is probably one of my all time favorite movies in the world.
Oh, wow.
And that's Steven Spielberg. Horror movies, I love the original Texas Chainsaw. That's, you know, it's near perfect, you know, as far as a scary movie goes. The original Hills Have Eyes, I like that a lot because that just wigs me out. The Exorcist and The Omen are, if I'm going top shelf horror movies, Exorcist and The Omen, unquestionably my favorite movies, the originals, Gregory Peck version.
Yeah, I was talking with a buddy of mine the other day, and we were talking about all the big box office movies lately. And I go, did you know that The Exorcist, adjusted to inflation, is by far the highest grossing movie of all time? Wow. And it like blew him away. And I was like, hey, when that came out, that was the scariest thing anybody had ever seen.
It's still scary. It scares me now.
But yeah, it blows Avengers and Titanic and all those movies out of the water with inflation.
Oh, get out of here with Titanic.
You know I love that movie.
There was room on that door, Rose. There was room on that door.
There was.
DiCaprio won't talk about it. He dodges that question in interviews. Go ahead, Gene.
Part of the diamond water. What the? Jesus.
So what's next for you? What do you got? Do you have your next project lined up?
I'm working on the script. I've got two scripts. Actually, one's 64 pages into, the other one about 30 in. But one that I'm really wanting to do, and I'm already talking a couple about, is it's called Bethel on the Hill. And it's about a kind of a hippie religious commune that is trying to influence a town to better itself, but in the worst kind of way.
That's interesting. I was reading an article on Script Shadow recently, and Carson was talking about how there's not enough commune cult scripts out there.
Yep. And this one's almost done, and it's unnerving. That's a thing. It's a drama horror. It's hard to say what kind of movie it is, you know, but it's interesting. It's social. It's got a lot of social impact, you know.
And that's so important nowadays. Like that elevates your script and your project to like a whole different level when you can have that social commentary with just how specific today's audiences are demanding their content to be more power driven than just situational.
Right. Well, I tried to do that with Get Gun without putting it in people's face too. You know, there's social issues on bullying, racism, intimate domain, pushing people off their land, the oil drilling and fracking. There's a lot of stuff on the underneath of Get Gun that I tried to, you know, express my concern over, you know, in some kind of way.
Yeah. And that for sure came through. That was, I thought you did an excellent job with that.
Without being too preachy. That's a thing. That's
You can easily be very preachy about it, but to like be able to integrate it into the story and have it embedded into the recipe of your narrative, you know, hats off to you.
Thank you very much, guys. That's nice.
Yeah. Yeah, I love the idea for the new one, too, because one of my favorite shows in 2018 was Waco.
Oh, yeah.
Which was super well done.
It was, I agree.
TV miniseries. But, I think those – yeah, that can really, play with some people there. Because you're either super religious or you're somewhere in the middle or you're anti.
It's not really even – the religion is the paint.
Yes.
The actual – The other part is basically the religious leader who runs the cult. His name's Darwin.
Okay.
he's a kind of a hippie, but he's, you know, it's Old Testament kind of religion. So he actually wants them to be, he's a good guy with good intention and a good heart. The problem is, as we see in the world, when stupid people put faith in an idiot who says bad things, but they think it's right. They act on it, and they cause people to get hurt, and they cause damage, and they cause death. And that's what this group is doing to this small town. I mean, the small town's not the best place in the world, but they don't need those people up in the business. You know, and that's kind of what's going down. And without, you know, shoving that in people's face, I think that'll be obvious while they're watching the movie too. Like, you know, because you can't point at somebody and say, hey, you're an asshole. You have to show them a sequence of stuff so they can watch and say, wow, that guy's an asshole. Oh, wait a minute. I do that. You know?
Yeah.
If you can do that, you can help people identify their own BS, you know? I mean, I'm hoping so I'll do that so I can find mine.
I like it. So, JD, do you have any other questions on the movie side?
No, I super enjoyed the movie, and I'm very glad and happy that we got to have you be a part of the show tonight. And we don't want to keep you for too long. This has probably been a little bit longer than our normal interviews, but you're a fantastic guest. So,
yeah, no, I was trying to find some social media. I know there's a website up, filmfreeway.com /getgone. You can get a lot more information on there about the movie. Is there a Facebook page up?
Yes. And a website. My website is getgonethemovie.com.
Okay.
That's getgonethemovie.com. And at Facebook, it's getgonethemovie, or at getgonethemovie at Facebook.
All right, perfect. And then do you have a social media? Where can people follow you?
Michael Thomas Daniel. I just got my normal Facebook page. And if you hear me on here, let me know that, because I don't accept all friend requests because there's so many freaks. And I like freaks, sure, but not all freaks. You get some weird stuff if you accept
everything. Oh, yeah. Yeah, you will. So, so guys, check that out. Support it. Again, it is going to be in select theaters January 24th, January 28th. It's on VOD. Go find it. And then February 11th, you want to own it, you can buy it. It's on Amazon. It is for pre-order right now. Now, Michael, we'll get you out of here on this. We always give a couple questions to our guests out the door, just let the audience know a little bit more about you here. And these are always fun questions. So what was the first car you ever owned?
A puke green Volkswagen. I don't even know what the hell it was. It was a weird looking, it wasn't a Bug, it wasn't a Jetta. It was shaped like a box. I bought it, or my dad bought it used for me when I was 16. It was the ugliest thing you ever saw in your life. I had to use a jam box for a radio in my passenger seat.
I love it. Do you remember the year?
1981 or two.
Okay. How long did it last you?
About 8 months before it just died.
There you go. Always
like gasoline.
Yeah. Okay. What was your first paying job?
Oh my God, the worst job in the world. Company called Riverside in Moultrie, Georgia. I was just starting high school. It's a uniform rental company, and they rent to hospitals, to gas stations, to everything. My job as the new guy there, as a high school kid, was to, when the trucks came in, I had to count the bloody rags, the maggot-covered towels, all the nasty oil rags from gas stations. That was my job. I had to sit there in a bag and pull these bloody towels and count them through a counter.
Boy,
you.
That lasted about 3 weeks, and I walked out. I was like, I told my dad, I was like, I'll get another job. I got a job at a video store. My life never went better from this point forward. It just went better. But God,
video stores
in the world.
Yeah. Ugh. Okay. What's the last song you listened to?
The last song I listened to. Oh my God, that was just. What was just Jesus? Well, I don't know. Can I say that one? That's so weird. I just had my iPod on my ears a minute ago. Well, I could say it was something off a Yield from Pearl Jam.
They say bonus if you can sing it.
Oh, Jesus on him to canvas.
That's not a bad Pearl Jam tone there.
That was good.
Yeah, thanks.
I love it. I like it. All right, and last one for you. This is always the tough one here. Who's your favorite Batman?
Michael Keaton.
Yes.
Good answer. Good man. Okay. This has been fun. Thank you so much, Michael, for coming on the show. And Yeah, absolutely. We really appreciate having you. And again, if everybody wants to support the film, I highly recommend you check it out. It's a very fun movie. Again, that is Get Gone, and you can find it on VOD January 28th, February 11th on Amazon. Michael, thanks for coming on.
Hey, thank you, guys. Thanks, Justin. Thanks, Kyle.
Thanks so much.
Yep, have a good night.
Right on. Later.
All right, JD, we've just wrapped up. What do you think about the interview with the director, Michael Thomas Daniel? Thought he really did a great job of bringing the energy.
Oh, he's an energetic cyclone of excitement. I can say for sure that I disagree with me all you want, but he will be a future guest. He needs to be knocking out when we do anything from Sleepaway Camp 2 to Silence of the Lambs. Like, this guy knows his stuff. Actually, if anything, he's going to replace you and be the new co-host, because I hate you and you're awful. I love you.
Oh, and I like that. Now, I know he mentioned he's a fan of Spielberg. Maybe we bring him in for Back to the Future Part 3.
Ooh, that's good thinking. And he's also a fan of Joe Dante, which we've already knocked off a couple of Joe Dante films, too.
Gremlins 2.
Yeah.
To bring him in for the sequel. Yeah, so I think there's a couple of good ideas there. So, again, yeah, guys, support his movie. We watched it today. You know, we got it for free. I'm not bragging or anything. But, yeah, we got to see it before you guys did. And it was fantastic. I enjoyed it a lot. You can, again, get that on VOD January 28th and on Amazon DVD, Blu-ray, I'm sure, as well, February 11th. But, yeah, for now, let's wrap it up. We're going to be back next week with all new episodes. We'll be back to our normal formatted show, and looking forward to bringing you guys some more great content. Subscribe, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, CastBox, YouTube, IGTV. Follow us on social media at Back in Time Pod. I'm at KAutry29. JD is at Unjust Justin. But for now, we are out of time. Time to get back into the DeLorean. Punch in today's date and return back to present day. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you guys next week. See ya.
What happens if you stab somebody at the same time that they're stabbing you? Is it murder or self-defense? Just asking for a friend.